But today is a special day. Not to give too much attention to this, but you know, we're able to assemble this morning because of those who have fought and believed enough in what America is all about to go put themselves out there and to do what's necessary. You know, my family and I took a trip to Washington, D.C. It was about a year ago. And it's the first time I really had ever, I had never been. And much of it I'd seen in history books and or in magazines. And I never really made a connection with it. But as you kind of go through those memorials and you see the Korean Memorial and the Vietnam Memorial, World War II Memorial, and just they have a way of indicating how many lives were lost at each of those places. And the World War II Memorial has stars that represent a certain number. I believe it's 1,000 per star, something like that, and there are stars everywhere. And just the price that was paid is almost immeasurable. And, you know, there are people out there now who are fighting. They're better equipped than they've ever been. They're better protected than they've ever been. We've got drones that fly over and get situational awareness. We've got fighter jets that can see miles away and that cannot be seen and reach out and touch the enemy and protect our young men. They have armor. They have a lot of protection. But, you know, and that makes them a lot safer than they used to be. But just like the warriors who fought before them, the true protection we have is God and the Holy Ghost. And we ought to pray for the guys who are out there and pray that God will put a fog around them, that the enemy can't see them, and that God will protect them and look over them and protect them. And we should never forget why we're able to gather and why we're able to worship. There are forces out there that would wish to take this away from us. Some of those forces are external to our country, and some are internal to our country. But this country was founded on Christian principles. It was founded on God. And had it not been for some very brave men and women a long time ago that thought, I'll give up everything just so I can have freedom to worship. And they did. Some of them gave up everything. And they suffered persecution to lay a foundation for this country. And it was real. Those were real men. And that's the connection that I made when I went to Washington. I didn't realize, you know, when you see it in print, it's one thing. But when you stand by the memorial, the Jefferson Memorial, and you read his words, and my goodness, who even thinks that way? Who can even articulate that way? It's unbelievable what God put into some men and the purpose that he put in some men, that they would stick to it and that they would get through the end of that and build a foundation for us. And you don't get that on your own. Nobody's that brave or nobody's that wise. Nobody's that good. At the end of the day, they were just men. If you do any reading, you look at Lincoln. He stood in a time where he had to make a stand and had to make a purpose. And he was paramount to abolishing slavery, an abomination to the America that had been built, something like slavery. And he stood, and even in his strength, he had the human experience. If you read about him, you'll understand that he was a man of great melancholy. That's what they called it back then. What we call it today is depression. So he fought through that great melancholy and stood in a place where very few could stand and created a bridge between God's purpose and this country. And it cost him the ultimate sacrifice as well. But his legacy lives on, and our freedom lives on because of people like him. So I don't know where all that came from this morning, but I think God would have us appreciate, and he would have us appreciate the purpose of the Holy Spirit. You know, everybody here has a time. You're here now. This is your time. You've got a time in your day-to-day. And guess what? Everybody here has a purpose. And when you know you're in God's will is when your time connects with your purpose. You can be doing a great work, but if it's not the right time, or you can be right in the right spot, but if you're serving the wrong purpose, you're not married up with God's perfect will in your life. So we need to be working and praying and thinking about how to connect our time with our purpose and to do what God has us do. And it's not always an easy spot to be in. Sometimes God has us trudge through some pretty deep waters, and the forces and the currents are against us. But God said His yoke was easy and His burdens were light. And what is it, Brother Adam? If He takes you to it, He'll take you through it, right? Okay, so my lesson this morning starts in the book of Matthew. So I'll have you, if you will, turn to Matthew 7. I want to talk this morning just a little bit on the subject of judgment. The subject of judgment. You know, there's judgment everywhere. Everywhere you turn, you're either judging someone or someone's judging you. We're summing each other up. You know, some days I feel like I'm in favor and things are going my way. And some days I feel like I'm totally out of favor. You know, we do the ups and downs. And a lot of it has to do with how others judge you, how others judge me. It feels like some days I can't lose. You know, everything I say is brilliant. Everything I say is funny. And I'm you know, just as smart as I can be. And other times I think, well, my goodness, this just isn't working. I don't have a clue. You know, and the truth is, the second most of the time, I don't have a clue. And any time I look as if I do, it's because God has given me favor in somebody else's eyes. I'll tell you one thing that we can remember when others are judging us is their opinion of us doesn't determine who we are. You are what you are, and regardless of other people's comments or labels on you, that doesn't make you that thing. But, you know, how would you know that unless you've decided who you are? You know, we have one of the biggest victories you can have in your life is to decide who you are. What is it that you do stand for? What is it that you are all about? If you don't know that, then anybody can tell you you're anything.
That's right.
Until you've settled yourself, settled your heart, settled your gut, you're open to the whims of any wind of doctrine, any wind of opinion. You are what anybody labels you. So I would say decide who you are and stick with it. Lay your foundation in the Word of God. You know, we judge others. And we judge others. I love what Brother Vince said last week when he testified. He said, you know, we only choose to pray for those people who we like. God wouldn't have us just pray for the people we like. God would have us pray for those people who are hard to love. Do y'all have anybody in your life that's kind of hard to love? Just works you and works you and works you and won't let you reach out to them and be good to them. And they're just hard to love. Some people that know you may have someone in their life that's that way. So I would recommend you not be that person. Don't be someone who's hard to love. I know that I'm hard to love. But when we do judge other people, we always look at them through our lens. You know, we all carry our own unique lens, and it's formed by the experiences that we've had in our life. My lens is a little different than yours. What I'm trying to say is we all have different perspectives. There's a book, it was a New York Times bestseller called Blink, written by Malcolm Gladwell. And his whole book is about how we can sum, because of our human brains and the complexity of our human brains and the way it stores different experiences, we can sum up a situation in a blink. A lot of times we can do that, and it speaks to like someone who's looked at, say, an art appraiser that's looked at thousands and thousands of paintings through their career. They can often look at a painting and say, oh, that's a fake. When they go through all their tables and they go through all their information and they see that everything about this situation is perfect, everything about this situation is right, this painting looks real, but something in my gut says it's wrong. Blink, it's a fake. And oftentimes, he gave several different instances where these experts would be presented with situations. And even the, you know, they looked at a sculpture, and even the carbon dating, everything was perfect. All the lab tests showed that this thing was real, but the group that stood around said, something's wrong. For it to be 2,000 years old, it just couldn't be this bright or this clean. Something's wrong. Well, in our lives, we build, and a lot of times we may be right on our blink judgments. But sometimes based on our experiences, we become cold and we take a blink judgment of someone else. You know, you've heard the statement, never judge a book by its cover. People will surprise you. And people will sometimes have something in them that you never realized. There, you know, and the point I'm trying to make here is, don't think you're so smart and you're so good that you can judge someone else and sum them up in a blink. Because I don't care how good and how quickly our brain processes and stores information, very often you could be wrong. You know, when I was younger, my blink impression of most people was that they were good, that they meant well, and if they told me something, it was probably true, because I acted as a person of integrity. At least the words that came out of my mouth most of the time were true. And I thought, well, most everybody's that way. So if you told me something, I took it at face value, because why would you just look at me and lie? That was when I was younger. Now I've built up some experiences, and, you know, good, bad, indifferent, negative, positive. I always doubt first when someone tells me something. Don't know why that is. I'm sure I'm wrong, but who am I to judge? When I was studying this lesson, I came across a preacher who had written a sermon on this, and he said that he was a photographer, and he knew all the rules of photography. He was an amateur photographer, and he knew how to get the right lighting. He knew how to get the right setting, the right background. He said he would go take a series of pictures, and at the end of the day, after he developed them, he would go look at them, and he would say, this one's good, this one's bad, this one's bad, and he would toss it out. So he tossed out these pictures at the end of the day, and he said, you know, I've got the right to do that because I'm the creator and I'm the judge. I created those images. But, you know, people, we didn't create them, and we're not the judge. And there's only one that can judge other people. He created those images. In Matthew 7, if you will, verse 1, says, judge not, that ye be not judged. You know, the world is always tolerant. There's a tolerance society right now. The word tolerance is used to explain a lot of things. If you describe yourself as tolerant to a large group of people, you've just said that you agree with a lot of things. It's communicated as you accept, as well as righteous, a lot of behavior that goes on in society. So the world is arms wide open. Come on in. We love you. But it seems that Christians are quick to judge. We are quick to shun. And unfortunately, we're quick to abandon when someone does fall. God help us. You know, we can love without necessarily being what the world calls tolerant. We don't have to accept behavior to love people. It's okay to reach out to people that do things that you're not fully pleased with and love them. You know, Jesus did that. How else did he reach anybody? If you don't believe Jesus did that, what are you doing here? If he never reached to a sinner, if he never reached to someone that was doing something unpleasing, you would have never darkened these doors. Because I guarantee you, I didn't deserve to be reached out to. And I don't deserve to stand here right now. This isn't a matter of deserve. This is not a matter of deserve. It's not a matter. It's a matter of Jesus reaching. And Jesus coming. And being loving. Not tolerant. Not tolerant in the definition that we as we use it today. But willing to reach out and get up next to a sinner and love him enough to save him. So in verse 2 it says, "For with what judgment ye judge, ye shall be judged." Oh my goodness. What judgment you judge, you shall be judged. I'm going to be needing to show a lot of people a lot of mercy. Because I am due. I have built up a bill that's going to require a lot of mercy. "And with what measure ye meet, it shall be measured to you again. And why beholdest thou the mote in thy brother's eye, but considerest not the beam in thine own eye? Or how wilt thou say to thy brother, let me pull out the mote in thine eye, and behold, the beam is in your own eye." All the energy in the world to go take the mote out of your brother's eye. All the busybody business to go try to correct somebody else's problems. But we don't spend time correcting our problems, do we? We don't spend time working on ourselves because it's not us. Who in here is married? Yep, don't raise your hand. We spend all our time trying to fix our spouse, don't we? But we don't spend any time trying to fix ourselves. You know, I'm learning more and more as I get older. And I must be feeling like I'm getting older right now, but I guess I am. That most of the issues at my house are my problem. I've got a wonderful wife that I love very much. And, you know, I can act a certain way and I can cause certain things. And you know what? It's on me. And it's on you. You can't fix somebody else. You need to fix yourself. You need to fix yourself. "Or how wilt thou say to thy brother, let me pull out the mote from thine eye, and behold, the beam is in thine own eye." And 5, "Thou hypocrite, thou hast first cast out the beam in thine own eye, and then shalt thou see clearly to cast out the mote in thy brother's eye." So when you get all your business cleaned up, then you can go worry about somebody else's business. Let me know. See, everybody else's sin is always bigger. We tend to put sin in categories, don't we? We got big sins and little sins. You know, our big sins are the murder, the gambling, the cheating, the lying, the stealing. Those are the things that you know, those are big sins. Maybe drunk driving, you know, some of the big things out there. But, you know, the little stuff, a little white lie, a little indiscretion, maybe you slip, you know, behind the bar and get a little drink, a little smoke. Maybe a little gossip. Well, it's not really gossip. I just, you know, people got to know. I got to share it. It's not gossip. I mean, it's got to be justified somehow, right? Have you heard? Did y'all hear? I mean, I don't know what, you know. That other person gossips all the time, but have you heard this?
Yeah.
Proverbs 6, verse 16. If y'all will turn there. Proverbs 6, 16. See, God, you know, He has His own judgment of sin. It says in Proverbs 6, 16, it says, "These six things doth the Lord hate. Yea, 7 are an abomination unto Him." Okay, these are the things that the Lord hates. Number one on God's hate list is a proud look. Where's the murderer? Where's the alcoholic? Where's the homosexual lifestyle? Where's all those things? Not number one. It's a proud look. Confidence in ourselves to the point to where we think we're better. You need to have confidence, yes. But your confidence had better be in what Christ is doing through you and what He's able to make you be able to do. Not in your own ability. Because it can go, your ability can go just like that. Well, what ability are you talking about? I don't know. Are you smart? It can go just like that. Just, I mean, there's blood flowing through your brain all the time. It could stop. But you stop in one small spot, and you're not intelligent anymore. Are you attractive? Just like that. Do you have lots of money, nice clothes, nice car? It could be gone before you get home. You have nothing to be proud of. You have no ability to make it. You have no ability to keep it. You have no ability to sustain it. So what are you so proud of? You can be proud of what Christ is doing through you. Number two is a lying tongue. Worse than all those other things? A lying tongue. Number three, hands that shed innocent blood. Don't touch God's innocent. Don't touch God's children. Don't touch those that can't defend themselves. Don't touch those that haven't done harm. You know, I'm in a business. You guys know where I work. I'm in a business where we make jet fighters, and we make things that shoot bombs, and we make a lot of military type items. And I have never felt any remorse for that, because we've got to be a strong nation, and we've got to protect ourselves against the bad guys. And if someone who chooses to do harm to my family and to my country has to die, I'll sleep just fine. I will. That is not innocent blood. That is not innocent blood. Innocent blood are those who mean no harm, who can't protect. Don't do them harm. God hates it. Especially God's children. God forbid you ever hurt one of God's children and take their innocence. Number four, haughty eyes. Haughty eyes, what is that? It's a lot like number one. It's elevation of oneself. Who do you think you are? A heart that deviseth wicked imaginations. Feet that be swift in running to mischief. Oh, I just love a good problem. Hey, dear, can I help you through this problem? Because I don't have enough information about it. I got to gather some information so I can spread it. I'm here for you. Right? I'm here for you. Just spill your guts in your time of need. Just spill it. I'll help you. Help you right out of that problem. A false witness that speaketh lies and soweth discord among the brethren. Working that mouth to tear down the church. It says, among the brethren. So you know, another sin that God hates, it's not listed here, but He talks about it, about us being hot or cold. And if we're lukewarm, He would spew us out of His mouth. Gives the image of regurgitation, of sickness, of something that He cannot tolerate. It's a sin, basically, of apathy. Yeah, I'm not going to take a side. I don't really care. I'll come warm my pew. I'm not going to stand outside of here for sure. Apathy is the glove into which evil slips its hand. Y'all heard about idleness being the devil's workshop. It's just another way of saying that. Apathy is the glove into which evil slips its hand and does its work. Because if you don't care, then Satan can use you. If you will turn to, I'm going to try to go through this quickly, but John 8. Okay, John 8, verse 1, it says, Jesus went unto the Mount of Olives, and early in the morning he came again into the temple, and all the people came unto him and sat down, and he taught them. So verse 2 talks about Jesus coming again to the temple. It tells me this was a routine for him. He's at the temple again, teaching again. I just had never seen that before. When I think of Jesus in the temple back then, I always think of that, you know, just it happened just a handful of times, or just two or three times. But this verse tells me that, well, Jesus is there again. It's just so much that, I mean, God gave us a complete account. He gave us everything He wants us to know and everything we need to survive. I just wish I could get in, we could crack time travel so I could go back and just see what we didn't, what wasn't pinned down. It would just be, you know, that's just my own personal I would love to see it, because I doubt it was all captured. Verse 3, it says, "And the scribes and the Pharisees brought unto him a woman taken in adultery. And when they had set her in the midst, they said unto him, Master, this woman was taken in adultery in the very act." Now, you guys remember, my lesson is about judgment. It's not about adultery. It's about judgment. But if you've turned on your TV in the last couple of days, you've seen the news on General Petraeus. General Petraeus is one of the probably one of the prominent leaders in our generation. He's a great man. He's done a lot of great things. There's no telling how many lives have been saved, how many soldiers have been protected because of the decisions that he's made. He fought to get supplies. He fought to get order. He fought to get structure in Afghanistan. He stood out in a time when the country needed him to stand out. Then he retired from the military and was put in charge of the CIA. Now, there are books written about him, but there will never be another book written about that man where it doesn't mention how he has stepped down from his office and what caused him to step down from his office. One indiscretion is so costly. It is so costly. And the future of what he could have done, what he could do, is now tainted by that one indiscretion. So I got to tell you guys, and I don't want to spend too much time on this, but if the devil's telling you a lie out there, and he's telling you there's another path beyond your marriage, you need to denounce that lie, because there's nothing on the other side of that that's good. There's nothing good that can come out of that. No matter what picture is painted, no matter what you think you're missing out on, no matter what, that is not God's way, and God won't be pleased with it, and it will cost you. So now Moses in the law commanded us that such should be stoned. What sayest thou? This they said, tempting him that they might have to accuse him. But Jesus stooped down with his finger and wrote on the ground, as if he heard them not. You know, I've heard so many things said about what Jesus wrote on the ground. Just like I said before, God told us everything we needed to know. But he didn't tell us that, did he? So when they continued asking him, so they came just to trick him. They came to put him in a situation he couldn't get out of. He kind of ignored them, because, you know, he was God, and he had that right. You know, he had the presence of God. He created this whole thing. So, you know, he wants to stoop down right on the ground. That's pretty much his business. But that didn't satisfy them, so they kept going at him. So he lifted himself up when he decided to, and said unto them, "He that is without sin among you, let him first cast a stone at her." And they which heard it, being convicted by their own conscience, went out one by one, beginning at the eldest, even unto the last. And Jesus was left alone, and the woman standing in the midst. So I have to use my imagination too, because all the generations before me have tried to figure out what Jesus wrote on the ground. So, you know, I'm no different, right? I'm arrogant enough to try to guess. You know, I thought, well, you know, Jesus did perform a lot of miracles. And I'm off road here, so y'all just bear with me. But Jesus did perform a lot of miracles, and Jesus is a very personal God. And when he speaks to us, he speaks to us in a very personal way. He calls us by name. He speaks to us by name. Now, I've heard some people say that he might have written the word pride. He might have written the word, who knows, just what else he might have written there. But I like to imagine that when he wrote, everyone saw maybe a different word. And maybe they saw something that was specific to them and to their heart. And maybe it revealed a personal sin in their life. Because each one of us standing here, if I had a whiteboard or a blackboard or whatever kind of board, or a Promethean board, whatever kind of board we're using these days, if I were to write some words, it wouldn't affect any of you. If I were to write other words, some of you might get up and run out of here crying. So God has a way to reach us in a very personal way. And I just like to imagine that whatever he did there on the ground was very personal, and spoke to these people enough to cause them to move. All right, so I'm back on road now, y'all. Hope y'all enjoyed that trip off the four-wheeling. So, when Jesus had lifted up himself, he saw none but the woman. And he said unto her, and this is very important, "Woman, where are thine accusers? Hath no man condemned thee?" She said, "No man, Lord." And Jesus said unto her, "Neither do I condemn thee. Go, sin no more." So Jesus, the Creator, he took all the pictures. He created all the pictures. He gets to choose what stays and what goes. When he came to this woman and was put in the position to where he was to judge her, he said, I don't judge her. Just go and sin no more. Jesus showed that even at a time like that, where the law said she's to be stoned, he said, I give grace. All for grace. All for mercy. So who are you to judge? Who are you to judge? You don't have the grace or the mercy to offer. So who are you to judge when it comes time to measure somebody up? So the Bible is very clear about sin. The wages of sin is death. And without the shedding of blood, there is no remission of sin. So that's why God made the way, so that he could flow grace and he could flow mercy through the cross where he died on Calvary. So I'm going to wrap it up right here, but deeper in this chapter, after Jesus had them drop their stones and walk away, immediately after this verse, at verse 12, he starts saying, just after he told her to go and sin no more, he starts saying things like, these crazy things like, "I am the light of the world. He that followeth me shall not walk in darkness, but shall have the light of life." So immediately the conversation turns to, well, who is Jesus? Keep going, keep reading, and get all the way to the end of that chapter at verse 58. After he had said it to him 30 or 40 different ways, he said, "Verily, verily, I say unto you, before Abraham was, I am." That's what got Jesus crucified right there. It was those words, "I am." Because he told them at that moment, "I am the beginning and the end. I am the Alpha and the Omega." He told them that I am the Messiah. And it was that very thing that they couldn't tolerate. Look at verse 59. This is in the same setting. "Then they took up stones to cast at him." So I guess they gathered the stones they'd thrown down that they were going to throw at the woman caught in adultery. So the same one that could forgive, and the same one that could shame everyone else into walking away because of their own sin, was about to receive a stoning. But of course, Jesus hid himself and went out of the temple, going through the midst of them, and so passed by, because it wasn't his time. It wasn't time. And Jesus was never to be, he was never to be taken by being stoned. That wasn't the way it was written. So, to me, this just tells us how filthy us human beings can be. Almost in the same breath of getting a lesson on tolerance, the lesson's not even cold in our hearts yet, we become intolerant very quickly. So just remember, don't judge. You didn't create it. It's not yours to judge. Thank you for your attention.